everyone, and welcome to episode 102 of Connectivity. This week we have three segments for you and one bonus segment. Kicking things off, myself, Alex, and Neil talk about Rayman Legends. And after that, Neil and I talk about all the stuff to hit eShop this week, as well as a little discussion about Wind Waker HD. And then Don has an interview with Cubic Games. And after the outro is the bonus segment with JP and Neil all about the upcoming NFL season. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I'm with Alex Kawafi.
Hey, guys.
And Neil Ronahan.
Hi, everybody.
Haven't heard that voice in a while. And
this is the way I talk.
What voice? And we're going to be talking about Rayman Legends. The Ubisoft platformer just came out this week.
Was supposed to come out 6 months ago?
Right, it was supposed to come out in February. It just came out this week in the U.S. I think came out like the end of last week in Europe.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come out in Japan, I think, for another couple weeks.
First, it's a Wii U exclusive in Japan. Fun fact.
Published by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Tell that to all your friends.
So we've all played the game to completion. I reviewed it for NWR. Neil, you're reviewing it for Nintendo Force.
Yep.
And Alex, did you review it or did you just get a copy of it early?
I reviewed it for a website called ZonosGaming.com.
There you go. So we've all played it, we've all reviewed it, and we're going to talk about it because, oddly enough, and this doesn't happen very often when we kind of talk about these games we've all been playing, like we kind of all have different feelings about it.
Yeah, I guess, at least from a score perspective, and I think we pretty much all value scores in a similar, not exactly the same, but similar enough that this does mean something. We were, oddly enough, all 1 point away from each other. Scott, you gave it a 9.5. Alex, you gave it an 8.5. And right now, although this could change as my review isn't finished and posted yet, but I'm giving it a 7.5.
Wow. Okay. See, I thought you were in the middle. I thought Alex was the low one.
That's kind of because I didn't look at Alex's review until I finished mine, and then was like, oh wow, he wound up higher than I thought.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was a great game. I didn't think it was an amazing game, and I'm generally the type of person who, when people say games are amazing and I think games are pretty good, I start to come off a little negative.
Yeah. That's fine.
Oh, really? I had no idea.
Yeah, negativity, never heard of it. So before I guess we talk about just our strict opinion on the game and scores and start yelling at each other, let's just talk a little bit about Rayman Legends and how it differs from Origins.
It's way better.
It is way better.
I'm the dude who scored it the lowest, and I can already tell you that Rayman Legends is leaps and bounds better than Origins.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what's funny is I really enjoyed Origins when it came out, but there's just I really enjoy the level design of Legends, and going back to the unlockable levels of Origins, you can just tell that it's so much better.
See, it was the kind of thing with Origins where I got it on Wii when it first came out, and even Zach Miller, when he went to E3 that year, he had his Vita with Rayman Origins on it, and I played some of that, and like every time I played it, I tried playing it on Wii again, it never clicked for me. I was like, I feel like I should like this a lot, but it was something about the way that the jumping felt, and also just the way the levels were laid out, because it was a lot of like, go on our exact path through this level and collect all this bullshit. Not so much like kind of make your own way a little bit. That's what bothered me a lot about Origins, and Legends, for the most part, corrects that.
Yeah, one of the big things that I think Legends did a lot better than Origins, and I guess I'm taking this a little from the Giant Bomb stream today, is that they mentioned that levels in Origins, if it was a level in the same world as another level, they looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
In Rayman Legends, almost every level looks different, or at least different enough from one another.
Right. Regardless of being in the same hub world. Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, you're in the forest world to start off with in Origins, and it's like every single level, it just looks the same. I mean, the same forest backdrop, the same, like, waterfalls and everything. Like, it's all very similar, and it's broken up weird, too. I mean, Legends, for the most part, the levels feel like one continuous, landscape, whereas in Origins, you kind of, each level's, like, broken up into a bunch of, like, smaller little segments, and it's like you get to a door eventually, and then you move on to the next segment, and then you can't get back to the
Legends
previous segment.
Legends does that. Okay, with Legends go between the two, but it is still, like, segmented, where sometimes you'll just come up on a door and go through it.
Sometimes, but not as much as Origins.
And even the simple thing with Legends is that the way that they have the kind of worlds laid out in the painting system is so much better than Origins. With Origins, because they kind of had a mix of, like, a traditional, like, you know, like a Mario world map, Mm-hmm. And then they also had, you know, where you'd be running around as Rayman to get to the different worlds. Like, it just was all... I didn't like the way that Origins had their menu and levels set up, whereas in Legends, it's a lot cleaner. It's easier to understand.
You know what it reminds me of, in more ways than one, but specifically here, it reminds me of the jump from Super Mario Galaxy to Super Mario Galaxy 2, where Galaxy, you know, had this hub world, and not that the hub world was bad or not, you know, I don't want to debate that, but had this hub world, had a lot of exploration, and then in Galaxy 2, they were like, let's just get you to the good stuff, and it's like, here's just a little menu, you pick where you want to go, and, you know, you're there instantly. You're not, like, wasting time trying to remember which world was where and everything like that. And
that always annoyed me in Galaxy, as far as, like, knowing where to go next. I did really like that hub world, and did miss it in Galaxy 2 to an extent, because I thought that they still had a hub world in Galaxy 2, it just sucked.
It was very tiny. It was, it was nothing. But in Legends, it feels so much better.
Yep.
And you can just jump, you know, from all the different, like, content, quickly and get around, and I just appreciate that.
Yep. I think the funny thing about the world map is, like, how Origins was Super Mario 3. This one is a lot more like Super Mario 64.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, with the paintings, yeah.
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 So... I guess we might as well just get into the nitty gritty of it.
Well, did anyone play Kung Foot?
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah, once.
Yeah.
And it didn't really
grab me.
It
seems like it could be fun if I got, you know, five people together, but not for longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to get five people together to play Kung Foot.
Yeah. for people who don't know, it's basically a single screen multiplayer game where you basically just beat the shit out of each other and try to hit a soccer ball into different goals.
Yep.
Yep.
That's it. And I think where it was even born out of was just like the developers were screwing around and was just like, hey, this is kind of fun. Let's put it in.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad, you know, it's just sort of an extra little thing in the game, but I don't plan on spending any real time with it.
Yeah, it's negligible.
Yeah. I might get back into the challenges.
Yeah. The challenges are still pretty great.
Yeah. I love the challenges app. Like Patrick and I got hardcore into that for about a month. But then just kind of fell out of it. But I do enjoy them on this, and I might get back into it. We'll see. But those are great. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you haven't played the challenges app, there are daily and weekly challenges. Some levels you just try to survive as long as you can. Some you're trying to get to the end in the fastest amount of time and different things like that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, it keeps track of, you can see how you rank against your friends, how you rank against worldwide. There's like ghost data, which is awesome. You can see ghosts of like, people who are kind of near your time, see what they're doing to try to get better and beat their times or scores. So
it's pretty cool. I guess where I differ from you guys a bit is while you guys played at least some of the app when it came out earlier this year, my first time playing the challenges was when I got the full copy of Rayman Legends. And I didn't really try digging into them until I saw the rest of the game and I saw all of their level design and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the challenges just didn't strike me as anything that interesting once I saw stuff like the musical version of Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, well, I think the musical levels, which there are, because there are only five worlds, and there's one in each world, and then there's subsequent musical levels. But the musical levels are far and away the best thing about the game, as far as I'm concerned.
No question.
Those are fucking magical.
You think so? See, I really enjoy them, but they're not the best part to me.
Well, what is the best part to you?
I guess the regular levels.
Okay.
like I enjoyed the musical levels, and they're great as sort of like novelty, and they're really fun to run through the first time, but unless I'm showing like a friend who comes over one of them, like I don't anticipate really going through them again.
For me, it's like playing a song in Rock Band, where you don't want to do it all the time, but every now and then you're like, hey, I want to play through the Black Betty staging.
That's actually
kind of what I did with the challenge app. Is that as I would be playing the challenge app, sometimes I'd be like, oh, I want to play that Black Betty stage again.
Yeah. I guess to me, they're very heavily scripted, which is fine. But you know, there's just not much variety. I mean, you're basically just running and you're jumping in time, and that's okay. It's fun. I mean, it's great when you're nailing it and everything's coming together. Although it sucks if you keep dying and like the music keeps halting, you kind of lose that groove. It's like being in Rock Band or, you know, Guitar Hero and losing. It really like kind of stunts the growth of it, and then you know you hear the same segment over and over, and it kind of gets a little grating, especially in the secret ones.
Well, the secret ones are probably where I disagree the most, because the fact that in those, which I guess they're remixes of the ones you played before,
And I actually really love the secret ones, though. I really do, too.
I think those are specifically the best part of the game. Not because of the way they're remixed, but because of the fact that they're much harder and the things they do to the stages to make them much different, especially the final stage.
The final one is crazy.
Yeah, where it splits into, like, 64 screens.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. Neil, have you gotten all the way to the last one?
No, I did play through those, and those are amazing. Yeah, and there's one new really song great. In those, too.
Yeah, it's like, it's from the really old demo they had, like, last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that last one is insane. I do appreciate those, and those are very challenging, and I do like those. But I think even just the general level design is really great. I appreciate that, like, level to level, you're doing different things, and I like that, again, it takes sort of a nod from Super Mario Galaxy 2, even the first one, really, the whole series, but it's not something like a 2D Mario where you kind of start out, I don't know, like the power-ups sort of give you like an upper hand in levels, and every level is kind of built in this like general way, whereas in Legends and in Galaxy, it's like each level is sort of its own little like puzzle, and each level equips you with what you need to get through it, and then it's kind of its own self-contained idea, and then you move on to something different. I don't know. There's just something about the levels in Legends that I just.
I mean,
really
it's the kind of thing where I don't even really disagree with you that much. I guess just like our conclusions are a little different. For me, I mean, the levels were good. I mean, like I said before, it's so much fucking better than Origins. And this is a solid game. But for me, it just. I mean, it's the kind of thing where it's been like, you know, 2 days or so since I finished the main story, and it was just kind of like, I got to the end of it, and I'm like, oh, wow, it's over? And it's not like I didn't enjoy myself, but it didn't feel substantial. It wasn't that memorable to me.
Yeah, in my opinion, I told you this on Twitter a few days ago, but to me, with the collectathon and the floaty-ish physics that are a little precise at the same time, the game sort of came across to me as a slightly low-rent Donkey Kong Country Returns. And slightly low rent because the level design is still very, very good, and the Murphy levels are also really excellent and unique, but it's something to hold me over.
And at first, because I didn't start playing this game until like the initial embargo went up, I think all three of us did, because we didn't get hard copies until that official embargo went up. But I heard a lot of the negativity, people complaining about the Murphy levels on Wii U and how in single player, you know, they forced you to basically play as Murphy like once every three levels. And at first I was like, oh, it's not that bad. And then as I got farther into the game, I found myself skipping the Murphy levels and then like getting to the end of the world and being like, shit, I need to go back and play one of them so I can unlock like the last stage. I didn't enjoy them by the end of the game. It was the kind of thing like I wish it was more like, okay, yeah, in co-op, you have some, you know, you have more of a focus on that, but don't make it so you have to do the touchscreen bullshit for, like, you know, every other level.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that they turned into a little bit of a bummer by the end of it. I'm not going to try to argue with that at all.
Yeah.
But I think an even worse level type are actually the bosses that are in the game, because they look really, really great, and I respect the fact that they are trying to make them challenging, but what you can't do is if you want to make a challenging boss, you can't put forced checkpoints every 3 minutes.
See, I know you had a big issue with that. I think, what was that, with Runner 2 as well?
Forced checkpoints. It's not even optional, it's forced.
See, I don't really mind that as much, especially in the last bullshit boss. I enjoyed the first four bosses. I mean, not like immensely, but I thought they were pretty cool, good spectacle. You know, like interesting, like because it would be the kind of stuff where it's like, all right, you got to hit the boss, and here's a little platforming challenge that you need to do. And I thought that was really cool. But the last boss, I don't really want to get too much into it for spoilers, but it's just the way that the boss is set up is like, it's just like hit it a million times in a specific manner. And it's not that interesting. And then that was also part of the reason when I got to the end of the game, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? That's how it's ending?
Yeah, it feels like the boss before the final boss.
Yeah. Like, it's like kind of like in Kirby's Adventure, where, like, you get to the end and you get to that boss, or, like, beat DDD, and then it's like, oh, no, it's a, like the Dark Matter or whatever is the actual real boss, and here's a crazy-ass shooting level and stuff like that. Like, I wish there was something like that. Except for the shooting levels in Origins kind of blew, so maybe not that.
So, Scott, how are we wrong?
Well, actually, I actually really enjoyed the boss battles. I do agree with you that when I finished the last one, I didn't expect it to be the last one. I assumed that the final world you had to eventually unlock was kind of like where the real boss was.
Yeah, same here.
But he wasn't. But I enjoyed all of the boss levels. Like you were saying, the spectacle was great. And I thought they were all very inventive, especially just coming off of... I know I just recently replayed... well, I played New Super Luigi U, but all the boss battles are the same.
Yeah.
And like,
yep.
Coming off of those where it's so familiar and comfortable and doesn't really... save for maybe one or two, none of the Koopa kids really surprise you. I thought the battles were really well done.
See, I think the thing, I mean, just thinking back to New Super Mario Bros. U and that it's been, you know, what is it, almost 10 months or like 9 months since I beat that game.
Yeah.
Although I did play Luigi U, so that's fresh in my mind too. But I do recall there were some moments that I was like, oh, that's cool in the Koopa Kid boss battles, but I'm thinking about it, and yeah, I played that fucking game, I played the bosses 2 months ago, and I can't really remember, like, oh, that specific boss battle, whereas with Rayman
exactly.
Legends, I can be like, hey, the Luchador boss battle was pretty awesome.
Exactly, yeah, that's probably the highlight, that one's really great.
Yeah, I like that entire world, that third world is the highlight for me. I like the art to it, I like the level design, And
specifically to that, I thought that's okay because the Murphy stages. First of all, they're great in co-op. I don't know how much either of you played much.
Well,
the thing
with co-op is that when it's not a Murphy specific stage, if you're using the touchscreen, it fucking sucks. However, you can just easily drop into a second platform player.
Yeah.
But if you have someone who just wants to play the touchscreen, then you're going to run into issues where it's like, okay, every third level there's something interesting for you to do. Which I guess it just. It puts them in kind of the conundrum because you don't want to go where Murphy's required for every stage, but you don't want to have it where it's an entirely optional thing. And, like, I get why they had the issue. It just, for me, like, I wasn't happy with the end result.
Yeah. Well, we would play, you know, normally through the normal stages, and then we would take turns every other Murphy stage being Murphy.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was perfect that way, I thought. And that whole idea is, I think, really built around two people because it is kind of boring with one person.
Yeah.
And the AI is not great. But that third world specifically is where, like, the Murphy stage is kind of turned around for me, because the first two worlds, you're just doing a lot of the stuff that I had already done in the challenges app. You know, just like moving platforms around,
yeah.
Or flipping switches or like poking the eyes out of fireballs, like that kind of stuff.
The third world was basically just a big tease for me because, like, that was like, I was like, this is going to get incredible. And then the fourth and fifth world, which is kind of like, oh, okay.
See, I thought the fourth world was great too. That's where my favorite level is actually, but specifically
what
third world. God, now I can't remember the name of it, but I wrote about it in my review.
Okay.
The one where you start off like at that electrified door and you have to go to the left and to the right. I thought that was so cool. I mean, that was such a neat idea. You start where you need to end up and then you're going left and right. And the first time, you know, you go through these corridors, brightly lit, regular enemies, you know, like everything's normal. And then you turn off the power generator and then you're sort of like sneaking through. There's like sentry robots around that, you know, if they shine their light on you, you're pretty much instantly dead. And you have to find different paths through because like the automatic doors aren't working anymore because the power's off. It was just a really inventive world and it was something I wasn't expecting. It's just like randomly
yeah,
there.
That was
you know?
Definitely one of the better levels in the game. But see,
yeah.
for me, the fourth world had a lot of those bullshit like the, I just remember it from, like, Turtles arcade games, where it's just like, oh, you're on an elevator, fight a bunch of dudes.
That happened, like, once, right?
I think
once
that
it was...
It was just one
world,
I think. It was either, like, a couple times in one level or a couple times in two levels, maybe.
There was one level that was like, completely built around it. I think
yeah.
Elevator was even in the name. It might have been, like,
okay.
Elevator of Doom or something.
But as much as the one that you were describing stands out positively, the elevator one stands out negatively for me.
Yep.
I didn't mind the elevator one, but that third world's great for Murphy stages because it changes what Murphy's doing. You're now, like, eating through cake to, like, make
yeah.
walkways and stuff for the AI or for your partner. And I thought that was so cool. Like, I thought all the Murphy stages were pretty much going to be like what you see in the first two worlds,
yep.
And I was kind of bored by it by the time I got to the third
and
world.
Then
and
then in the fourth world, you get to hold
it.
A button.
Hold a button? No, don't you,
You
oh
do
yeah,
like,
you do some button holding. I mean,
yeah.
You also aren't
you
using
like move
like,
those? You move like the balls to like block the sentry stuff. But like no, there's
oh yeah.
I know for a fact. In some of the Murphy levels, like, I think there was one Murphy level in the fourth world where it's basically like just okay, he's here. Hold the button until he walks past. All right, hold another button. that I was not a huge fan of. And then in the fifth world, that's when you're carrying the shield around. and blocking the fire, which is neat.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And then there's also the one where you're like you're making platforms, like you may use that like green ooze or whatever block lava and make platforms.
Was that the second world? I forget.
No, I think that must have been in the third or the fourth.
Maybe it was the third. I don't know.
It might have also been in the third, like with the cake eating one.
Yeah.
They could have both been in the same one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I enjoyed that. I thought they kept the Murphy stuff interesting most of the time. And I will agree, if you play entirely single player, those Murphy stages, I didn't find them to be a chore, but they definitely aren't.
They drag on a little.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, and they're very long.
Yeah, well, all the levels are long. It's just the Murphy ones feel
they're
even
a little
longer.
Too long, I think, in Rayman.
Well, because the AI moves so slow.
Yeah.
Yep.
The AI is like walking.
Hey, AI, hold down the right trigger for the love of God.
That's the only problem, because then you feel like you have no control. You know, it's like if you know there's a secret to the left, but you kind of like moved something the wrong way, the AI won't go and get it. And it's like, I wish I could just tell, like, make you go over there, but I can't. And if you're playing with a real person, you can easily correct for that. So
I got one thing that's not quite a complaint, but more of a comment just on Rayman Legends as a whole. So as you guys know, they pushed it back several months to add in, well, to make it multi-platform, but they also claim to add a bunch of content into the game. And one of the things
do we know for a fact what it is?
They said the 40 Rayman Origins levels, they said like 5 bosses, except as far as I'm concerned, there really are only like 5 bosses.
Yeah.
And a bunch of additional new levels. But here's the thing about that. I don't think that the game is particularly stuffed to the brim with content. Like, I did probably 80%-ish completion, like I beat all the levels mostly, and it only took me like 12 hours. And I am just curious, if this game wasn't delayed and didn't have this extra content put in, would Rayman Legends even have enough content to be considered a fair deal for a full game?
I think from playing the game and, like, the Origins levels, I know they for a fact said that was added. I think we'd probably be short the Origins levels and the Invasion levels. That's my guess.
Yeah.
If it came out in February, which, in all honesty, I could have done without all of those invasion levels.
I love the invasion levels.
I think they're good, but I think especially when you're going in that march to get the final unlockable world, I got to a point where it's like, I guess I just need to play all these fucking invasion levels.
Yep. The origin levels were good though, because they were pretty easy and they allowed you to get those teensies.
See, my thing is, I think the origins levels are boring as shit and pretty bad, so I farmed them. I use them for the purposes of getting that final world, but I was not happy about it.
Yeah, I could definitely live without the Origins worlds. Those are going to be the hardest for me to go back in.
And for the record, I mean, I'm very bitter about how much I had to play it to get to that, to get to the 400 teensies or whatever the fuck needed for the
final. At least it wasn't 700.
However, I wrote most of the review without having done that, so it's not like that's clouding my review.
It doesn't, like paint your opinion or anything.
Yeah.
See, by the time I beat the game, I was at about 330 or 340.
I think I was like 315, 320.
Yeah. So I didn't have much to go, and I really enjoy the invasion levels. I love that challenge. To me, in the end, Legends is sort of this like perfect blend between like the production value of like a Nintendo 2D platformer and then just the insane sort of creativity and challenge of like some of these indie 2D platformers.
Yeah.
That's what I really love about it. It's like this perfect marriage between those two, in my mind.
And I mean, we talked about this a little bit. If you want to see some of our Twitter conversation from September 4th, you'd be able to see kind of a preview to this podcast. But I think my thing is that I still don't really like the way that Rayman feels. It's still kind of loose to me. It's not quite as Little Big Planet-y as Origins was, but it's still more similar to that. I feel like I don't have a good handle on Rayman. Whereas,
I had no problem with that. Like, I had no issue with controlling Rayman whatsoever. Like, it feels different than Mario, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, you say floaty, and I don't really get that. Like, it doesn't feel floaty to me. Like, I feel in control the entire time I'm playing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just didn't feel that as much.
To be fair, though, I played a shit ton of the Challenges app, which gets you very, if you're going to be competitive, it gets you very comfortable.
And I played a bunch of the Challenges app, too, and I still had similar complaints to what I have right now. And I mean, I still enjoy it. It's just that, like, as far as, like, yeah, I'll totally give you that the levels in Rayman Legends are, you know, pretty inventive and creative, but I'd much rather play it with the controls of a Mario game than the way it controls with Rayman Legends. And I think that this game in particular made me appreciate just how fucking good Donkey Kong Country Returns is. And I'm someone who was never even, like, I mean, it's not like I was ever down on Donkey Kong Country Returns, but I was never super, super high on that game. I mean, I played some of it on Wii, and I didn't even finish it on Wii. I enjoyed the 3DS version, and, you know, it was very good, and that's kind of fresh in my mind playing through Legends, and as I'm getting through that game, kind of thinking about, like, what's missing about this? And then I just kept on thinking about how, like, man, Donkey Kong Country Returns is sweet. And now, thank you Ubisoft and Rayman Legends, I am super stoked for Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
Yeah, it's, Rayman Legends is a very, very good game. It is maybe a great game. I think I have a few problems with, I think it could have used more content. I think some of the content they provided, some of the side content wasn't particularly great. I feel like a little bit of it was occasionally rehashed from Rayman Origins, like some of the music tracks are nearly identical. And like the platforming, they didn't improve nearly as much. But you know what? It was still pretty fun. It was fun for 7 hours. It was fun for 12 hours. I don't regret playing it. I just don't think it's that amazing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just remember, right. Scott, you gave it a 9.5 and you're way hyped on it. Remember, I gave Kirby's Epic Yarn a 10.
Kirby's Epic Yarn, you gave Runner 2 a 10 as well. Yeah.
Well, Runner 2, I mean, I don't think that's as controversial as me giving Kirby's fucking Epic Yarn a 10. Although, to be fair, that was, I mean, as far as the games that I gave 10s, Runner 2 I have not really gone back to because it's still kind of fresh. But, like, I went back to Punch-Out, that game still fucking rocks. And I went back to Kirby's Epic Yarn the other year, and that game is just still a joy for me from start to finish. Like,
yeah.
That's probably the one out of the, I mean, and Alex and I were talking this with Lindemann on Twitter earlier this week, so it's been on my mind, especially with you giving Rayman Legends such a high score and me being on the sour end of it. I mean, it is the kind of thing where, you know, I get those doubts about games that I gave really high scores, and it's really gratifying to go back and play it and just be like, yeah, I can see why other people didn't like this as much, but I don't really fucking care.
Yeah, I guess that's
so
where I'm at.
So be proud, Scott. Be proud.
Well, I am. I mean, I don't doubt myself.
Enjoy your video games.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's exactly what I wanted from a 2D platformer. It feels like the kind of the next step for the genre and this sort of like reboot that we've seen in like the past year, starting off with New Super Mario Brothers on the DS. It just feels good to me. And I'll say that, you know, I got the game Friday and, you know, you told me you'd like to have the review up before the game came out on Tuesday. And I was like, okay, like that shouldn't be a problem. And then it especially wasn't a problem because I never wanted to stop playing unless I had to. I mean, like even I was playing Friday night and Tabby got home from work and she's like, oh, my friend's going to come over. Like, we're going to hang out. Like, let's, you know, like drink and just like watch a movie or something. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And I was like, yeah, as soon as she gets here, I'll stop. And then she got there, and, like, I probably still played for another, like, half hour before they were finally like, okay, like, can we do something? And not
just
that they weren't enjoying
the
watching
pad,
it,
man.
Because they were, well, yeah, I guess I could have. But it was like, I just didn't want to stop. And I love that there's enough variety in the levels themselves, even within worlds, that nothing feels, to me at least, the same. Maybe save for the Murphy stages. But other than that, like, moving from level to level was always fun, and I always liked sort of discovering what I was going to have to do next in each level. So,
yeah,
I just really enjoyed it. It really appealed to me, so.
It's good that we're ending on a positive note.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to build to, so yep. I'm glad it happened.
Awesome. Well, I guess that'll do it then.
Yeah.
Tell
us how you feel about Rayman
exactly.
Legends. Email connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com or hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Enron10.
I am at CULAFIA. I have to spell it out because most people don't know how Calafi is spelled.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Let's get Alex some followers. He's got 44. I want
to
see
that
number.
You know what, Scott? I don't want to get into this again. I appreciate your help. But
just trying to help out.
Let's end it on a positive note, Scott.
People just don't know you're out there. You haven't, you know, you're kind of new to Twitter. You started one a long time ago and never used it. So
I know.
I'm
were my first
you
follower.
Out. Heck yeah.
Do you want to know what was pretty funny is I started attempting to use Instagram recently and I was like, I don't think I made one. And then like, I'm like making an account using my, you know, my staple Enron 10. And then it's like, oh, an account was already made. So I go in and, you know, get into it. And it's just like, I never posted a picture. the only person that I'm following is Mike Sklens. And like I think my friend Billy was the only person that was following me. And I'm just like, that's when awesome. Did I do this?
That's awesome. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am OKSoda. The letters OK and the word soda. So there you go. Let us know what you think about Rayman Legends. If you haven't already, I say check it out. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
If the Challenges app is still up, at least download that. I mean, it's basically like a really good demo.
Try out the Challenges app. It's got a couple levels, more polished than like the in-store demo and everything. And then it also has the Challenges app, which I think that demo, you know, the Challenge app will still run concurrently with the actual game. I'm pretty sure. So.
Well, as I was going to say, us, studious news reporters here should keep an eye on that to see if they pull that at any point soon. Now that the real
I actually
out.
Deleted it once I got Rayman Legends.
I haven't yet, but I should.
Yeah, because I got the little bonus for it, and then was clearing out the fridge because I have not gone digital only on my Wii U, so I have to clean the fridge. I'm too lazy to get a hard drive.
Not me. I'm rocking that terabyte. You know what I mean? Hell yeah. Actually, it might even be 2 terabytes. God, I don't even know.
Oh,
it's
damn.
Huge, though.
Yo, man, break me off a piece of that something. Just like 20 gigs. Come on.
Yeah. I'll send you a little SD card. All right, that will do it. Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Nintendo, this week in Nintendo, whatever you want to call it.
Some week in Nintendo.
Yeah, the occasional week in Nintendo. Basically, Scott and I did this once, and then the next couple weeks are boring, and then whenever it was an interesting week, just shit came up. So now we're going to try doing this again. And this week still isn't that amazing. But I guess let's start with the cool part about it, and that's the Wonderful 101 that's available this Sunday, September 15th, probably a day or two after you listen to this. If you're in Europe or Japan, it's been out for like 3 years.
Yeah, this is actually a GameCube game.
Yeah. Well, speaking of GameCube games now, but yeah, The Wonderful 101 is finally going to be coming out. It's the game from Platinum Games, directed by Hideki Kamiya, who directed Bayonetta, Okami, Beautiful Joe, Devil May Cry, Resident Evil 2. Dude's done a lot of good games.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate to get our man in Seattle at the time, Kurt Bonds, to get a copy of The Wonderful 101 when it was for sale at PAX Prime and sent it my way. I haven't put too much time into it, but so far it's just bonkers insane.
You know, it's pretty cool that they did that in PAX. Like, I remember when we were there in Boston, they sold Luigi's Mansion, like, a few days early, but it came out that Sunday. I mean, this was, like, almost 2 weeks early that they were selling this. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they only sold 101 copies a day. So that means there were, I guess, 404 copies of The Wonderful 101 in the wild. And yeah, I mean, I am only about 2-3 hours into it because I got the game, and then I think when I got it, I was finishing up playing Rayman for review for Nintendo Force, and then I had like a couple busy days at work, then finally put some time into it. The next day we got the Wind Waker HD download code, which I'm on that for this very site, and we'll talk about that a little more after we wrap up this week in Nintendo. So I haven't put as much time into this game as I would have liked, but I really like what I've played so far. It's really, really busy. It's crazy, but there's a lot of depth to the combat as far as I can tell, like a lot of like using the right ability at the right time, and then you can do this stuff where it's like you have one and then you can draw another one and the computer will control it, and just kind of playing everything off each other is really fun. And I'll be honest, I don't really know what the hell is going on some of the time. And I think that is a cause for concern. I mean, we've seen a lot of kind of, I guess, mixed reactions about this game, where some people, it just doesn't click for it. Whereas for some people, like including James Dawson, who reviewed the North American version for us, clicked really, really well with him. But yeah, Scott, are you going to get this game at all?
This is like one I'm kind of on the fence about. If honestly, if Zelda wasn't coming, like, what, the next week?
Yeah, 5 days later.
Digitally. Yeah, I would, like, probably for sure do it, but it's the kind of thing where I'm, like, kind of balancing them out. I'm like, I can't really afford both right now, and even though this is a new game, I know I'm going to love Wind Waker, yeah. And as we were talking about before we recorded, I haven't played it since it initially came out, so I'm actually really excited, so I kind of lean that way, but if that wasn't in the equation, then yes, I would get it. Now, I'll probably get it eventually. I mean, I like Platinum, and it looks interesting enough. I'm not too worried about what people have said, you know, negatively about it. I think I can, deal with that, so.
I mean, it's kind of weird because it's like playing it really does remind me of stuff like Beautiful Joe and Bayonetta, but it doesn't, like, I wouldn't say like, oh, it plays just like Beautiful Joe, because it doesn't, but it just, it has that style, it has that sensibility. Like, Kamiya does have, like, he has that distinct style that even though all of his games are really different, it all kind of is cohesive in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say it kind of reminds me, not that I spent too much time with Devil May Cry, but it kind of reminds me of how that series is, where it's a lot of juggling between, like the sword and guns and stuff like that. And this thing, you're also juggling between sword and guns and just shit that you draw on the touchscreen, which so far I'm definitely siding on Team Analog Stick. And just when I'm playing the game, like drawing on the gamepad, like it's as fast as the game is, I find I only can do quick precision on the right analog stick. Maybe that'll change as I get to the more complicated ones, like there's like the hammer and the whip and stuff like that. But I don't know. I'm also playing the game on easy, which, if you're a pussy like me, it's definitely the way to go. but even still, I mean, it just, Kamiya games are notoriously hard. So if you're really stifled by the game on normal, just drop it down to easy. I'm not sure if you can change in between levels or anything, because I kind of knew from the start, knowing what I've heard about this game, I knew that, you know, for me, I want to drop it down to easy. It's the kind of thing that I might play through it and then go back and play it on normal, but it's kind of me thinking about how, like, I'm going to be playing a fuck ton of different games, and I don't want to get frustrated and not finish this game. I'd rather have it be a little easier and actually finish it. And even so far, like, it's been hard, but not, like, to the point of death, just to the point of, like, I'm fucking up a little bit, and I'm like, okay, if I do this ability here and then block here, then cool stuff happens. But I recommend it if what I have said is at all appealing to you. It probably will be up your alley. Unfortunately, I think the sales potential for The Wonderful 101 is like dog shit. It's a terrible time for it to release.
Yep. Another game that would have benefited from coming out during this like abysmal January to July period.
Yeah. I mean, I could also hear an argument probably that it wouldn't have sold like in June, because I don't think it would have. I just think, I mean, if you look at like the Wii U faithful, if you will, I know a lot more people not getting The Wonderful 101 than I do, like, you know, that weren't getting Lego City or weren't getting Pikmin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think a little bit of it is that, like, it is so weird and it's hard. Like, there is really no elevator pitch for this game other than, like, oh, man, it's crazy and you control 100 people. but, yeah. So let's move on to the other stuff. And we'll take a little detour to the ridiculous eShop sales that are going on right now.
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Super Little Acorns 3D Turbo is half off. It's normally $8. It's now $4 till October 2nd. That's actually a cool little platformer by some guys that used to work on the DJ Hero games. I believe I reviewed it. Gave it an 8.0 back when it came out.
There you go.
Came out of nowhere. I think it was based off a mobile game. But it was just something that like we got randomly contacted about. I was like, oh, cute little platformer, and then played it, and it was a lot of fun. So, for $4, I don't know if you can really go wrong. And then Bike Rider DX, which was a huge seller on the eShop in Japan. I don't know how well it's done here, but...
Was it really?
Yeah. Like, I think it's just one of those things where, like, it came out at the right time. Kind of like the first Dempamen game.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, Bike Rider DX is $3. It's kind of like a, it looks like a Trials clone. I believe we have a review. I'm not sure how positive it was. I think it might have been like in the 6 or 7 range. And then a bunch of Renegade Kid games are on sale. Bomb Monkey, ATV Wild Ride 3D, Mutant Muds on 3DS, and also Mutant Muds Deluxe on Wii U. Which I'm now kicking myself because I bought Mutant Muds Deluxe on Wii U like a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I'll hold out for a sale, and then I was drunk one night, and was just like, man, I want to play some Mutant Muds on my TV.
Yeah, I bought it. I bought it about a month ago or maybe 2 months ago, so I just checked it. Bike Rider DX was reviewed by our own Kimberly Keller, and she gave it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Pros, challenging and addictive gameplay, energizing music, and extensive content. Cons, lack of wireless capabilities, no competitive options. So, sounds like not great for a multiplayer option, but as far as maybe a single player experience, not too bad. Especially for, what, $3 now? So. Yeah.
And then, I mean, all the Renegade Kid games, I mean, I think Mutant Muds is great. If you haven't got, if you have a 3DS and a Wii U and haven't gotten the game, get the Wii U version. It's,
yeah.
It's got the most content.
Mm-hmm.
ATV Wild Ride 3D, I mean, I've got some issues with it, but it's a fun little racing game. I think it's like $6 or $7 with a discount. It does have online, but I don't know if anyone's playing it anymore. The online ran really well. But I think I think Tyler reviewed it for us. And I think Tyler and I were pretty much in agreement on how that game was. Someday there might be a review posted on IGN. That I wrote months ago, but has never been posted. So that's what happens.
You've told me before there was stuff you reviewed that never went up. I was wondering what
I think it was Kersploosh and ATV Wild Ride 3D are the two that never got posted. That was basically, that's what happens when you write reviews and, you know, complete the whole process, and then the company gets bought by a different one and half of it gets shut down.
Yep.
That's why those reviews were never posted.
Yeah, but you didn't get paid, so.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yep.
I'd gladly write stuff no one ever saw and get paid for it. That's not a bad way to go.
And then the last thing that's on sale is Tokitori 2 Plus, which is, I guess, just the new name for Tokitori 2. It's also got this massive update, where they added, like, new puzzles, new music, new pretty much everything, it seems. And they've cleaned that game up a lot, because a lot of my issues with it when it first came out was that it was kind of obtuse. It looked beautiful, but it just sometimes you get to a point where you're like, what the hell do I do? I haven't gone back to the game since like a couple weeks after it came out, but supposedly they've updated a lot to make it a lot clearer, and they've really listened to feedback, which is awesome. And now you can get the game for $9 until September 19th instead of the regular $15. So that's a hell of a deal.
It's
a great game. Moving on to the Virtual Console, on 3DS we got Tecmo Bowl, but no players. I mean there are players, it's just that they're not licensed. So instead of, you know, Walter Payton, you just have whatever Walter Payton's number is, which, I mean, Scott, you're the Bears fan, you should know that.
I don't know, I'm not, like, legitimately a Bears fan. I just, if they beat the Packers, I'll just talk shit to you, but that's pretty much, that's the extent of
Dick.
It.
but yeah, I mean, Tecmo Bowl is a great game. It's just that know full well that you're not going to get the NFL license with it. You're just going to get teams that are conspicuously named and colored in the same way as NFL teams with players that are very familiar to real players that played in 1988.
They did the same thing for the Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah,
this is right.
This is essentially that exact game. And it also has download play, so.
That's awesome.
That's probably the only reason I'd ever get this.
Yeah, that's a really smart addition.
Yeah, they've done that for a lot of 3DS games, 3DS NES games. I think Ice Climber has it, Super C. There's a couple others, too.
Didn't the Ambassador version of Super Mario Brothers have it?
Yes. Yeah. And then on Wii U Virtual Console, Zelda 2 The Adventure of Link is coming out, which I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, the only reason I care about this is because it means we probably will get A Link to the Past before Link Between Worlds comes out, which is awesome.
Yeah, because 2 weeks ago, the original Legend of Zelda came out.
Yep.
And then we have a bunch of DSiWare crap. Letter Challenge, Tales to Enjoy, Little Red Riding Hood. Those are different things. And Tales to Enjoy, Puss in Boots. Two of those are interactive stories, and one of them is a word game. That's it, except for the 3DS eShop demo of Etrian Odyssey Untold the Millennium Girl, which will be available on Monday, September 16th. And, Scott, did you ever play the Etrian Odyssey 4 demo?
I didn't play the demo, but I played the actual game.
Oh, okay. I forgot that you got the actual game.
Yeah. I wasn't in love with it, though. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I had just come off of Fire Emblem, which I was, like, really high on, and then to come to this, which, like, what I adored about Fire Emblem, apart from just the strategy that's always been there, is kind of the care they put into the story and the characters and the relationship between the characters, and then coming to Etrian Odyssey 4, it's like, yeah, we kind of got rid of all that, and all you do is explore, like, dungeons and draw maps. And I was like, well, that's fine, but it kind of, to me, it was a letdown. It was a fine game, though.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really dug it. I'd always been curious in the series before 4, and then played 4 and kind of fell in love with the series. So I'm very, very excited to dive into Etrian Odyssey Untold.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? It's like a remake, right? Of one of the
remake of the original. The original was a 2007 DS game. And then there were two other ones on DS and then 4 on 3DS. And Untold runs on the same engine as Etrian Odyssey 4. So it's very similar in that regard. But the one thing that they did add is they have a more traditional story mode to it. Whereas with the past games, it's kind of, I guess, like Dungeons and Dragons-ish, where it's just like you, or like Final Fantasy 1, stuff like that. You just assemble a party and go out, and like there is a story, but it's not really like, you know, character development or interaction. It's just you have a party, you're adventuring, and some shit happens to other people along the way, and you help them.
Yep.
Whereas this one, there's a whole story, and we'll have a review of this game up on the week after the demo, September 23rd. Justin Baker is on that review, and we'll probably have a segment on connectivity about it either next week or the week after. It depends on how it all shakes out. I think we will record it the week that the review goes up, and I think it'll be in that episode, but who knows.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to check out the demo. Is it the same thing where progress you get in this demo carries over? That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I wish more games would do that, especially looking at, like, the Mario and Luigi Dream Team demo. Like, come on. Those games... I have not played the actual 3DS eShop demo of Mario and Luigi Dream Team, but I'm 99% sure that the save does not transfer over, and those games are really laborious to go through for a second time. So now, I guess, for the rest of this, we can talk about the Wind Waker HD, which I'm in the process of playing, and I'm in the zone right now thinking about when I'm going to put the pen to the paper for the review, which will be up a few days after you listen to this. So I guess, Scott, if you have any questions about how the Wind Waker HD is, we can start there.
Whew. Well, I mean, first of all, obviously, just how does it look now that you're playing it? You see everything. You're really seeing it in motion on your own TV. Like, how does it look?
It's kind of funny because I was playing it before we started recording this, and I asked Lauren, I was like, so what do you think about this? Doesn't it look great? And she's like, I mean, it looks like a GameCube game. And I'm like, shut your mouth. But, I mean, it is the kind of thing where it still has a lot of what makes the GameCube game a GameCube game. It's not like it looks bad or anything, but you can, like, at least in the character models and everything, it's still very reminiscent of that art style, and that's why I think you do have a lot of the reactions when you do see it, you know, like, you know, just on a TV screen during E3, and you're just like, it doesn't look that different, because it honestly doesn't. It just looks super cleaned up, super polished.
Yeah.
There's some weird lighting that I don't really like, because, like, there's some things that are just way too bright, and then the contrast looks weird. But for the most part, I think it looks even more beautiful than it did before. It's not this huge, gigantic leap, because the original game still does look very good, but it runs very smoothly. It just, it all looks better.
Good. Yeah, I've seen, like, some comparison videos, and yeah, it doesn't, like, blow my mind or anything, but for as simple as the original, like, art and look of the game was on GameCube, it's amazing just how clean and sharp it can all look.
Yeah.
It's still simple, but just very clear.
And I mean, and just in general across the game, I mean, I think the change that they did to it is they kind of cleaned up the pacing. They just made things flow a lot better. Like, for example, like when you get the Wind Waker and the grappling hook and like the bombs when you're on the boat, that is all mapped to the D-pad at all times. So you don't need to equip the Wind Waker to use it. It's just there.
Nice.
And like when you're in the boat, you just hit, you know, right on the D-pad and out comes the grappling hook to, you know, salvage stuff. You don't need to have it equipped.
That's
which
awesome.
Is, it's kind of funny because I kept on equipping them early on and then realized I'm like, oh, it's just there. Okay, cool.
That's a good move. Did you get the, like, the sail that makes you faster?
Yeah. And even the sail, once again, you don't need to equip that. It's just when you're in the boat, you hit the A button, the sail comes out.
And you start going. Does it make a big difference, you feel like?
Yeah.
Really?
The only thing is that getting the swift sail is probably the most asinine process. And,
oh, really?
And considering that it's something that it's like, if you're frustrated by the game or something, that's kind of how I see why they have it in there. Is it's like, oh, you don't like, you think the boating's slow. Here, get this, it'll make it go faster.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a, it's like a side quest. It's like a secret. It's in the auction house, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just one of the items there, and it shows up randomly. And
oh.
You need to bid on it, and it goes up to a high bid. So if you don't have enough rupees, like what happened to me is I got fucking outbid on it. Like I had like 200 plus rupees on me. And was just like, all right, I'm going to get the swift sail. I want to see how it works. Like, I think it was the first opportunity I could get it. I got it because it's after you beat the first dungeon, the Dragon mm-hmm. Roost Cavern or whatever it's called. I went back and probably went in and out of that damn auction house about 15 times. At time 5, it appeared for the first time, but then I got outbid. So I went and, you know, grinded for some rupees around the town, went back, went in and outside of the door another 10 times, finally got the sail, and then won it. And it does make a big difference because you just don't need to worry about changing the wind direction. It just makes it a lot smoother. I don't think anything's lost. I think it's the ideal way to play the game now.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm not quite at the Triforce hunt yet, but apparently they clean that up a lot. And I'm on the cusp of getting to the point in the game where you have to do the command melody all the time to, like, to, you know, switch between the characters. I don't think they really fixed that too much. That was probably, because I replayed it, like, 4 years ago, and that was the part that really bothered me the last time I played the game, was that the command melody, you know, it took too long. And
mm-hmm.
then that also got me thinking to, like, how Twilight Princess, you just had the Dominion Rod, which is just an item that you'd point at something and just be like, now I control you! And Wind Waker, you have to, you know, use the Wind Waker to, you know, do the song. But I
mm-hmm.
guess because you don't need to have the Wind Waker equipped, it does, it will quicken it up a little bit. But I wish there was just kind of like, just like, fucking hit a button and switch characters.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it looks beautiful, and that game just in general holds up so well. The
mm-hmm.
combat's awesome. It's not, you know, it's not as in-depth as Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword, but it doesn't feel like when I played Ocarina of Time 3D, back when that came out, where that conclusion that I came to at the end of that game was that the combat in Ocarina of Time sucks.
Yeah.
It's really old, it's really dated, whereas in Wind Waker, it's not like there's that much depth to it, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because, you know, as you're attacking an enemy, you have that dun, 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 dun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, just the parry system's fun, because then that encourages you to kind of stay behind and see what the enemy's going to do, and then just, you know, tap the button at the right time, and you do a cool spin to the back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's really fun to just play that game. And
I'm excited.
I really think playing through it now kind of solidifies it as my favorite Zelda game. Maybe not the best, but definitely my favorite. And so far, it does not feel like those dungeons, like, I mean, that the whole thing how people are just like, oh, it's missing dungeons, like, it does not feel that way. And actually, to me, it's one of the most organic feeling Zelda games ever. Because, like every other Zelda game, there's a, like, clearly defined axe. And I guess Wind Waker does have that, but it just feels like, it's not like you get to a point where the story is just like, alright, now you can go to these next six places. It just, it does it, because it's usually smaller things. Because it's, you know, you go to the fortress in the beginning, and then you go to Dragon Roost, and you go to, you know, Farron Woods. Or whatever, I think that's what it's called. Or Forest Haven. I'm getting confused with Twilight Princess names.
Yeah.
And that's all like, you know, it's like a linear path throughout it. It's not like you have this whole thing about like, you know, okay, now you need to get these three pearls, although you do. But I mean, it's hard to explain. But it's just that, whereas I feel like when I play Ocarina or when I play Skyward Sword or Twilight Princess, it felt like there's this very segmented, like, you get these three things, stop. you get these six things, stop.
Yeah, whereas Skyward Sword especially had that. And then, yeah, like, Ocarina of Time, yeah, it's like, get the three things. Oh, now you're older, now get the six things. Yeah, it was, yeah.
And I think what helps Wind Waker a lot, too, is that you're motivated to save your sister for the first half of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that your motivation is less collect all this bullshit and more, I want to save my goddamn sister.
Right.
And I think that's one thing that they kind of nail in this, is that for a character that probably has about 15 to 20 lines of dialogue tops, I think they do a really good job at making Errol, like, a character that you want to save. And I think that's important to do, because, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people got into Midna, but even that, like, you were sort of saving Zelda for most of Twilight Princess,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't until the end that you kind of learn more about Midna, and then you find out, oh, that's the Twilight Princess. And then Skyward Sword, like, you know, Zelda is dynamic in that, and you're chasing her, but even still, it's like you're chasing her because she's like a MacGuffin for most of the game.
Yeah.
And for those don't know what a MacGuffin is, it's just a random thing that you chase in a movie. what always comes to mind, I think this is around the time when I was in, like, some screenwriting class, and we talked about the term MacGuffin. The first Transformers movie, how it's just like, we need to get the AllSpark. And what does it do? I don't fucking know. We just need to get it.
Exactly.
That's a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited for other people to play this HD remake because it is awesome.
Have you taken a bunch of selfies as Link?
Oh god, the selfies thing is so dumb, but it's so great. See, my thing is that I'm very hung up on finding, like, the perfect self-portrait for Link. But it's something that's so stupid, but I can't wait to see what people post on Miiverse.
Yeah.
Because it even does the thing where it's like as if Link's holding up the fucking camera, like, because, like, he's off to one side,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you can, like, you just, you basically, like, use, like, the left analog stick, and you just, like, put a dumb face on him. Like, if you go, like, you know, one direction, it's like, he'll have, like, a sneer, or, like, you know, his angry face, or he'll, like, smile, or he'll have his eyes all wide.
Yeah.
Like, it just... It's so awesome, and I can't wait to see what people do with it. I mean, I've been very... I tried to do one with the Master Sword, but then I triggered the cutscene before I could. I'm so pissed.
At the Hyrule part? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's why I was looking for good ones, but unfortunately, like, a lot of the stuff in Hyrule is too high to really get a good selfie.
Yeah. Well, it's an art, Neil.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit before our time.
I only started, you know, with the Instagramming recently. So.
Exactly, yeah. There's a whole generation that's been doing selfies for years that are going to nail this. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing that I'm more excited for is people who have never played Wind Waker before playing it for the first time. I'm curious to see how those people would react. Like, you know, the younger folks who might have not been born when Wind Waker came out. And that's what this remake, at least to me, that's who it's really aimed at. I mean, of course, yeah, there is the aim at people who have nostalgia for it and want to replay it, but I feel it's also that they have younger fans who have not had the chance to play Wind Waker, and now here's a way to play it.
Yeah. It falls perfectly for me because it's old enough that there's a good chance that a lot of people who would get it now haven't played it, but it's also recent enough that it's not going to be so rough around the edges. Like how you mentioned Ocarina of Time, like the combat, like you do it now and it just seems underwhelming. Like it's that perfect combination of age, but like still being refined as it is and, you know, not needing much work. So I'm excited. Like I said, I haven't played it since I was like in high school when it came out, like just over a summer. I think I've told the story before. My friend stole it from me from a local grocery store / like department store. He got really big into stealing that summer, and I said I wanted it, and for whatever reason they didn't have their games behind glass, they just had them like out, and so he just opened it and took out the disc for me and then like put it in a jewel case later and gave it to me. So that's how I got Wind Waker. Sorry. But all worked out. He got caught trying to steal shoes one time and then had to do like community service for like weeks, so he got his.
I was gonna say my experience with a friend being a thief was so when my brother is 8 years older than me, and so when he was in high school, you know, I was like 9.
Yeah.
And there was like some school trip, to go to Washington, D.C., and when his friends got back, one of his friends was like, oh, man, I got you Star Wars magnets. And I'm, like, 9, so I don't really question it. And then, like, I found out a couple, like, I think it might have been a couple weeks, maybe a couple months later, about how, like, yeah, he got them with the 5-finger discount. And I was just like, what's that? And then, I started doing the math in my head. I'm like, oh. And the funny thing is that I still have those magnets in the fridge today.
Where did he steal them from?
It was just, like, at a store. Like, they're just Star Wars magnets. Oh, okay. Like, you know, like, a cutout of, like, R2-D2 and...
I thought maybe, like, they took a tour of that White House and he, like, took them off the White House.
That would be pretty great. Dude, Clinton fucking loves Star Wars.
He really digs that Han Solo guy. Yeah. Well, awesome. That all sounds good. So I think we're pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah. That sounds like a segment. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Hello everyone, and this is yet another interview for an upcoming eShop game. I'm here with
Michael Bourget, the public relations manager of Cubic Games. Cubic Games is we are indie developers in Poland, in Warsaw.
So you already introduced yourself. That's always a nice thing, so I don't have to ask it. So, Cubic Games has been around for a little while, and you have created, like, some interesting games for, like, Nintendo systems. Could you give, like, an overview of your company's titles?
Sure. So, we started by developing on Nintendo DSiWare. We've made actually the first FPS ever on this console. It was called Core, and later we've made some racing games, like Remote Racers, and also the Air Race series, containing Air Race and Air Race Tunnel. These are air racing games with planes. We've made also some management simulation games, like with My Little Restaurant and My Little Garden. But My Little Garden was only for iOS, actually.
I see.
And then we've made for Wii, we've made a game called Gnomes, which is like a multiplayer battle arena game. When you just have to smash your opponent with little joyful gnomes jumping around. Really fun, and from this atmosphere of gnomes, we've made Too Fast for Gnomes on Wii as well, and this is an auto running platformer.
Yes.
And we were happy with this, so we decided to bring it to 3DS and to sell it on the eShop as well.
So you made a good number of games there, really. I played a good number of them as well. I believe I played all of the iRace series, which we're going to talk about today in a little bit. And yeah, I mean, Too Fast for Gnomes is like the most recent memory of mine, really. Especially those levels are hard. Those are really, really hard levels. So you guys keep me engaged for like plenty of boss rides on my 3DS. So well done there.
Yeah, don't worry, we also had a hard time playing the levels.
So you kind of made it challenging also for yourself, really.
Yeah, for sure, so. it's a challenging game, but I think that's one concept, yes, die and retry. And we and this should be hard because this is the point, yes, to die and retry.
And there weren't also really not really long levels. You had a checkpoint at points and places, and then you could go on and then keep going till you finally got it. So it was fun to play.
Yeah, and also just to add something, the good thing is that it was very fast to respawn. Like we've made it really fast without any loading screen or anything, so the player could die and just continue playing right away.
Yes, but enough about Too Fast for Gnomes, because we could spend about that also for another 20 minutes, because we're here for Highway Speed, which is a sequel to like the games that you released in, I believe, 2010. That's correct, yes? Yeah. So, how did these ideas for these games then come to life?
Mm-hmm. How did Airace and Airace Tunnel came to life, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Airace Tunnel came before Airace. Mm-hmm. And Airace Tunnel was more like a prototyping game to try the system and to try the gameplay, how it is with this plane. But of course, it's a game in itself, yes, because you have challenges and everything, and you have a complete package. But it was more like a simple thing. You were flying solo inside tunnels, and you had to avoid the obstacles and get through the end of the tunnels. And your speed was constantly increasing. So the further you are on the level, and the harder it is to survive. And the reception was very good. People really enjoyed and said that the controls were very smooth. So that encouraged us even more to make Airace. But we already had it in mind anyway. As I said, it was like we wanted to make Airace, the big Airace, but we made just Airace Tunnel before. But that made us even more enthusiastic, and a few months later we released Airace, and this Airace is much bigger title, because it contains AI that you are flying against. You have power ups to shoot at your enemies, or to put a shield, or to speed up, and you have a lot more levels and different environments also.
Yes.
And basically this was the continuity, and it got even better reception because it was a richer game.
So for like the newcomer and casual player alike, because they might be a little bit confused, what can players expect from the title, and what makes the title so interesting?
Sure. Yeah, so this new title is coming on September 19th, so it's next week, and what can players expect? Basically, they can expect a lot of speed.
Sure.
That's the main point of the game.
Speed,
adrenaline, and immersion. The gameplay is rather similar to Airace Tunnel, because you're also going to fly solo through levels. You don't have a direct opponent next to you, and you have to complete the levels first of all, but you have to make a good score as well to pass the levels and to be able to play next tracks. And you have full control of your plane, so you can brake, you can use nitro. And you can expect also to have really a challenge to avoid all the obstacles and to avoid the tight curves, to pass them properly, because the crashes, if you are not careful, if you are just going too easy on the nitro and think, yeah, let's put up the nitro and just like this, you for sure you're going to crash.
That's the big problem with some people sometimes. They're being too cocky, then they slam themselves into a wall, and it's all over way too soon.
Yeah. And I can say that the levels are really... Nothing is generated automatically, so they are all done from scratch. So that means that we have been able to create very unique progress from one level to another. So it's important to know the level before, to know the track in order to make the best times, because you will know how is this curve, you will know how to pass this obstacle better. And there are also some splitways, some shortcuts that you will have to discover.
And it also makes it more fair, really, because having that not automatically generated progress there makes that the challenge still ramps up, but it is also really fair.
Yeah, yeah, and it also gives it gives endless possibilities for score improvement. And I think that it's almost impossible to get, you can't get the best score that a robot could do, right? Because and it's always possible that someone will be a little bit better than you and beat you and beat your score from 1 second or something like this.
Seeing as you now made a sequel, were there things that you changed or like turned around with to make the experience more enjoyable? Because it has like, it's quite a transition from going to like a DSi to like a 3DS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, obviously the first thing is the 3D effect, right? The stereoscopic effect.
Yeah.
So this was both a challenge to develop for, but it's also a big difference and a big advantage when you compare RS Speed with the previous DSi titles, because this combined with much better graphics give really immersion. And the visual impression on this kind of game is really important. Of
yes.
course, the gameplay is the most important. The controls must be smooth. But you can't, for this kind of game, I think also that the graphics and the visual effects and with the 3D effects are really crucial for the players to enjoy the game or not.
Yes. And the 3D effects also add like a lot of depth to that game, because it makes it easier to like see upon turn. So I can imagine that's also quite a nice feature to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and just maybe to tell more about the difference between these DSi titles and this this new 3DS title. It's like I said, the big difference is that you have full control on your plane on Aerospeed. So
yes.
this makes the scoring system much more interesting. And and if you want also, I can tell you, for example, about the development time that Aerospeed Aerospeed took around 10 months of development.
Okay.
And in comparison, RS and RS Tunnel required only 8 months together, both titles.
Oh, wow, okay.
So that's definitely a step up.
So you took your time to like experience what the hardware was on offer and then do what the best you could.
Yeah, yeah, until we were fully satisfied.
Yes, absolutely. Because I think that the game was originally supposed to come out in summer, but it was a little bit longer than that. It's now September, so I think you took a decent time and then thought about what you could do, really.
Yeah, that's right. We are releasing now in September, and because we just wanted to get exactly what we were expecting for.
The game isn't multiplayer focused, so it's mostly just about your leaderboards and what you can do, right?
Yeah, exactly. There is no multiplayer mode that allows you to race directly against players.
Yeah.
But like you said, there is leaderboard, and this leaderboard is online, right? So it's shared with all competitors around the world. So it's multiplayer in sense that you are comparing your score with other players.
Yes.
But you are still flying solo in the level.
Okay.
And this leaderboard gives you also the possibility to compare your score only with your friends. There is a special functionality that you can just see only the friends that you have registered on your console.
So you can only see the people from your friends. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so you can decide if you want to see all players or just your friends.
This is like worldwide, or is it also separated by region, or?
It's by region.
Oh, okay, by region. Okay. That makes it for an interesting comparison between players, I guess. So the player wants to be engaged for like a good number of hours. So how long will it like take to see everything in like iRace speed, and how do you keep like people engaged for like a good number of hours?
So it really depends on the player's let's say the how willing is the player to beat the best scores and to unlock all the things. But let's say that it's if you just want to complete all the levels, it probably will take you around between three and 5 hours.
That's pretty good, yeah.
And if you wanted to unlock all the achievements, because there is an achievement system containing 42 achievements. Yeah, some of them are really difficult to get, but some are more like some are more funny, just to tell you more a little bit about statistics of your gameplay and things like this.
Nice.
But this the gamers will see when the game will be out. But anyway, to unlock all the achievements, I think that you need to play at least 10 hours. So
okay.
It takes more than 10 hours, I think, to unlock all the achievements. And then, and then of course with the ranking leaderboards online, who knows how many hours someone can play to if someone wants to be on the podiums of every levels, of the 18 levels, and want to keep keep on the podium, he will have a lot of competition and he can spend really a lot of time.
Who knows where it will bring us. Yes, it could take forever for some people to want to be forever on that leaderboard top. So it depends on the player, really. So the style of the game is also really really impressive, like these abstract environments. Did you take inspiration of any particular, or is it something that came up of your own design?
Well. This would be a question to our designers rather,
yes.
But because I'm not in their head, but I guess that I think that it's kind of own inspiration. Of course, we get inspiration from everything around us, right? So always there is always influence, anyway. But I couldn't say that it's really. For sure, we didn't focus on one source of inspiration. It's not. I couldn't say, for example, we looked at this thing, this book or this movie or this whatever.
Yes.
And we decided to get inspiration. No, there was not this kind of process. So it was more like own creation, influenced by. Several things, but anyway, it looks futuristic, so it's definitely influenced by science fiction.
Okay.
And I think that could be the main the environment, the atmosphere is rather sci-fi, definitely.
Okay, fair enough. I can't blame you for not knowing everything. I'm sorry that I put so much pressure on you.
No problem. It's fine just to discuss.
No problem. So this is a more of an interesting question. So most of the titles before have been on DSiWare, and you, of course, you have a little bit of experience with publishing on Nintendo eShop with Too Fast for Gnomes. How is the comparison between the two, really?
I'm sorry, but I'm going to say again that I was not working for the company when we were releasing for DSiWare. So once again, I didn't experience the transition myself.
Yeah.
Because when I was working here, we were already releasing for eShop. But for sure, the big difference is the number of titles on the platform. and the competition is between titles, the concurrency.
So let me shape this question on differently. What are your personal experience with Nintendo eShop? Do you think it's a nice place to work upon and publish your titles?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we like to make games for handheld devices, mm-hmm. and we like to sell them digitally. So yeah. eShop is definitely great for us. That's why we went to DSiWare at first. And yep. then just switching to eShop was really natural.
Yes.
And now, as I said, the thing is that the eShop is really growing. So there are more and more very, very nice titles to download. And that's one thing that we need to take into consideration, because we know that a lot of other titles are nice and you need to make something special and original to appeal to the players.
And also the nice thing is that you can be featured like on that front page and like players will see your game.
Yeah.
So like the option of discovery is way larger as well than like Nintendo DSiWare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's true that the promotional features are more important.
Yeah, so hopefully many people will see the title and give it a go.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I hope so.
That's the dream, really. So what does the future hold for the company? Are there games you're currently working on or have future plans for?
Well, first of all, I can say that we are willing to continue the Erase series with the sequel. But of course, we are kind of holding back because we want to see how Erase Speed will do.
Okay.
Like, we want to see if Aerospeed is successful, how the players like it, and so on. But we are, if it's going well, we are definitely willing to continue the series. I can't tell exactly how it will be, what it will be, but I can say that we are really strongly thinking about continuing the Aerospeed series. And, yeah.
Is there anything else you are currently thinking about next to the Air Race, or it's currently that is your focus right now?
Air Race, we are developing now Air Race Speed for Japan.
Okay.
But that's the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, like I said, it's rather see how Air Race Speed does. Of course, we are thinking about different projects in the company because we have 15 people, so. So it's always our brains are always thinking about games, and we are always considering some projects, but nothing now. It's nothing concrete, nothing to announce really.
Fair
more
enough.
Than this, more than telling you that we are thinking about continuing the series if RSP does well.
So could you give like the final pitch for the title within a minute? Why should people be excited for Air Race Speed?
Alright, so Air Race Speed, lots of speed, 18 tracks with two endless ones, so that you can really push the limit. You can play 2 hours on the same track without crashing if you are really good. Leaderboard system online to push the scoring system. And I think very clever level design with really nice graphics and immersive 3D effects. So all of this at high speed, and for a price of $4.99, €4.99 £4.49.
You have 10 seconds left. That's really
okay,
well done.
And it's the last. It's the third game of the series. So the series was successful. So why not this one?
Okay, that's still within the time. That's really well done. That's like the strongest pitches we had on the show. So congratulations.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much for this interview. It was really nice. Really nice talking about the game.
No, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and that will do for episode 102 of Connectivity. As always, you can send us your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. You should follow all of us on Twitter, go to Nintendo World Report, look for the Twitter sidebar on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll find all our usernames there. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done so. Now, stick around for a bonus segment all about the NFL with JP and Neil.
Welcome to a fun NFL post segment here on Connectivity. I'm your host for this segment, Neil Ronahan, and with me is JP Corbin.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so what we're going to do here, we're not going to go into the exhaustive extent that the RFN guys did, but we're going to go through each division, talk about the teams a little bit, tell you who we think are going to go to the playoffs, and go from there. If you like what you hear, bother us, and maybe we'll do another one like a month into the season.
And also, if you want something more in-depth than this, if you like the NFL and you haven't listened to the podcast Greg and John and James did, you should definitely do that because it's really exhaustive. It's 3 hours long and they go into everything.
All right. Well, let's hit the ground running. We're going to start off with the AFC East. I have, I guess, a little bit of explanation as well. I have a cousin who does something where you pick every single game before the season even starts. So naturally, when I did this, I kept track of the win and loss records as I picked every single game in the season for this pool. So I'm going off of that. And for the AFC East, I have the Dolphins winning that division.
Seriously?
With the Patriots. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a little bit biased because Joe Philbin is the head coach there, and he used to be the offensive coordinator of the Packers. I mean, I think Tannehill has some potential.
Oh, he certainly has potential. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I mean, it's the same kind of situation my Browns are in, where it's like, you know, can he reach the potential is the question.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Dolphins, I feel a little shaky with picking them to win the division, but I think, with the Bills and the Jets being as shitty as they are, I feel like those are some easy divisional wins, and I think the Patriots are going to fall off.
I don't think the Bills are as shitty as you think they are. I think they've got a decent amount of talent and could surprise some people. Now, by no means am I saying they'll be in the playoffs, but they're not an easy win.
Yeah. I mean, I think the quarterback situation is what's going to kill the Bills, because I have a feeling Manuel is not going to last too long. And then you're going to have Jeff Toole, who's an undrafted rookie. And that doesn't look good for a young team.
But you do, I mean, you know, Manuel doesn't have to do all that much. When you got C.J. Spiller and then also Fred Jackson in that backfield, and they have, I think, an underrated defense. They've got a lot of guys on defense that are good. We'll see if they can come together. But, you know, I don't think they're going to be great, but I don't think they're as easy of a team to beat as some people do. But I'm picking
the Jets. Oh, the Jets.
No, the Jets are that bad. They're not worse.
Yeah, I think the Jets are going to be the worst team in the league. Probably, maybe they'll crack 4 wins at best. Yeah. So for you in the AFC East, who do you think will win that, and will there be a wild card coming from this division?
I think it's New England. I would pick New England because they're kind of the safe pick. They got so many weapons on offense. Now, you got a lot of turnover there. You got new receivers, but, you know, Tom Brady, I'm going to pick him until he convinces me that I shouldn't, because that's just so
until
good of a team.
He breaks his leg again.
Yeah, well, if that happens, then they're screwed, because I don't trust Ryan Mallett to lead
well,
that team to the playoffs.
Well, they still went 11-5 that year behind what turned out to be a really shitty quarterback. So
yeah, I mean, I guess Ryan Mallett could do that too, maybe. And I,
so
you
think
I don't even know.
Any other playoff teams?
I think Miami could, but I'm not picking them to. I mean, like, Miami's a big question mark there. They're a team with a lot of potential, but
yeah.
I'm not believing in them just yet.
I would say, I mean, they are really in a similar position to your Browns as we move to the AFC North. I mean, I have the Browns when I did this full season pick. I had them going 6-10, but it was one of those things where it was like, I could have seen it being 8-8 as well. I think I was just a little hard on them.
6-10 seems to be the consensus. If you go out and look at like ESPN or whoever picking records, 6-10 seems to be where a lot of people seem to be. And I can definitely see that. But to me, where the Browns will finish pretty much completely depends on the performance of Brandon Whedon. Because I think they have a very good defense.
Because Richardson will be solid. As long as Richardson's healthy, he'll be solid.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope he stays. Yeah, if he's healthy, if he plays 16 games, he could lead the league in rushing. I wouldn't be that surprised. Especially with how much they're going to give the ball to him. I mean, you got a good, solid group of receivers. It's just, can Brandon Whedon, you know, take a step? I mean, he doesn't have to be great. He just needs to not turn the ball over and make a few throws here and there and then hand the ball off to Trent Richardson. And they got a pretty solid defense, so, I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Browns and the Bills, I think, could both pull a Minnesota, where, basically an average team being elevated by a superb running back and a quarterback who doesn't fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. It's Minnesota is the blueprint here, because Minnesota has a solid defense. They got a decent group of receivers. They've got, you know, probably at least everybody's consensus number one back in the league. I mean, so, yeah, that's – the Browns can follow that mold. And, I mean, especially in the AFC where there really isn't that much strength there. I mean, the AFC's pretty weak. I could see them slipping in as a wild card. Again, it's on Brandon Whedon.
Yeah, see, I think they'll have a tough time with that because I think Baltimore and Cincinnati are going to duke out for that division. I think Baltimore is going to...
You know, I doubt Baltimore. I don't believe in Baltimore. They've lost a lot of pieces.
But I think the AFC is so weak that they don't really need to be as good as they were last year to, you know, make the playoffs. Like, I don't think they're going to go deep in the playoffs this year. But I think their tickets... that like, they need to play competent football, and I think they'll be in. And I think the Bengals could swoop in and steal this division because I think, I mean, they've got one of the best receivers in AJ Green. They've got a really solid defense. And once again, they're a team where as long as Andy Dalton doesn't really fuck up, and I think he's got a little more upside than EJ Manuel and Whedon, then I think they'll be in a really good spot.
Well, you said steal, and I wouldn't characterize it as stealing because to me, on paper, the Bengals are the best team in the division right now. I think they've got...
Yeah. I mean, they're just unheralded because... They're the team that quietly gets a wild card spot and then gets knocked out in the first round.
I mean, it's like the Browns.
I think they will win a playoff game.
Are still a little while away. I mean, I think the Steelers are a mess. I really don't see the Steelers being good at all.
I know you gave me shit for my snap judgment in the Nintendo World Report forum thread about the NFL, where I was just like, the Steelers will probably be a wild card team. And the more I thought about it and looked at that team, I think they're going to finish dead last in the AFC North. I didn't realize quite how much they lost, because I think one bad blow to Roethlisberger, and he's not even a great quarterback to begin with.
He's a pretty good quarterback, but there's no way he's playing 16 games. You look at his injury history; he hasn't played 16 games in years. So and their running back situation's kind of a mess, at least until Le'Veon Bell gets back. Their offensive line is really awful, and their defense has lost a lot of people and are. Getting pretty old, even who is there. So I don't see that. But yeah, I think.
Well, Polamalu's still there, but Polamalu.
He's a shell of his former self. Yeah, exactly. He's not what he used to be.
He's just basically a bunch of hair glued together.
I mean, I'm sure he's a good presence in that locker room, but he's not the player on the field he was a few years ago.
And I think the moving to the AFC South, I think the Houston Texans are going to run away with this division. But not really be that impressive about it. They're going to beat up on the people in their division, finish like 10-6 or 11-5, because I think the Colts will probably be like an 8-8 team, but I think they're going to fall back to kind of mediocrity. They really played above and beyond how they should have finished last year. They won a lot of close games.
The stat with the Colts was how many games they, you know, they won in the fourth quarter. The games they won late, and they won like 6 or 7 games that way. And the question is, can they keep that up? Now, I think I would still put the Colts in the playoffs as a wild card because I think they have a lot of good pieces there, and you know, in as weak as the AFC is, you know, I kind of have trouble seeing who's going to be good enough to get a wild card, and I don't think it's going to take all that much. Even if they are 8-8, I could see that being a wild card in the AFC this year.
Yeah. And I think Jacksonville and Tennessee are two of the, I mean, they're not quite Jets bad, but I think they're going to be in the bottom tier of the league. I think the Jaguars might, I think the Jaguars have a little more upside than the Titans because the Titans have a running back that's like just a cocky prick, kind of past his prime.
You know,
Jaguars...
he played well last year when he was playing. A lot of people are pretty high on Chris Johnson right now. But again,
I was gonna say, but Maurice Jones-Drew is in the same boat as well, where it's running backs that used to be very dominant and had either contract negotiations or injury troubles. But I think that like the wide receiving core in Jacksonville with Cecil Shorts and Justin Blackmon.
Yeah,
will be,
I mean, that's a solid group.
Improved and make Gabbert look better than he is.
Know. Yeah, I mean, this is the last shot for Gabbert. If he is not good this year, they're replacing him next year. So I think he's got a lot of pressure on him if he can deliver. Still, I mean, they're
the same thing with Locker too.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't. I mean, that's true. He wasn't. They were picked the same year, weren't they? Yeah, so I guess.
I think so, but I think whatchamacallit, Gabbert basically started right away, whereas. I think Locker was kind of on the shelf for a year.
But yeah, I would still pick Houston to win, although I don't think Houston is that good. I mean, they've got pieces, but Arian Foster, I don't think he's going to have a great year. He'll still be good.
Yeah.
In
my fantasy draft, he fell to, like, I think the beginning of the second round almost. He was one of the last of, like, the big running backs taken, and not that, you know, my fantasy league tells everything, but I think it's a pretty good sign about, like, this is where the kind of at least belief in this team is gone. I mean, I think their defense is still solid. J.J. Watt is amazing, I just don't see – I feel like the Texans are kind of like that House of Cards team that will always put together a good regular season, but they're just not the kind of team that's going
to
win the
playoffs. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Colts, you know, stun everyone and win that division because I think the Texans have it in them to just fall apart. But I still...
And they have pretty much every year,
but I mean, like,
or the past
few years.
In the
regular season, I'm saying. I think they could...
Yeah.
I can never look at them and say, well, yeah, that's a great team. I mean...
They pissed away the first seed last year because they started off, I think... I know they were, like, 6-0, and I think at one point they were, like, 10-1 or something and wound up going, like, 11-5 and falling to the third or fourth seed.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the kind of team they are. I mean, I you know, Matt Schaub has shown that he can be good, but he's not always good, and he's not consistent all the time. So, I mean, yeah, I think that they are the best team in that division, but I wouldn't be surprised if Indianapolis, you know, shows up and maybe steals it from them.
And then moving on to the AFC West, I think this is another division where basically it's Denver's division to lose. I think Denver is going to be the class of the AFC.
Yeah, I would say they're the most complete team in the AFC because I think they have an offense that's at least close to New England, and they have a much, much better defense than they do. I think this is a lock to me, especially if you want to talk about bad teams. I think Oakland, you said the Jets, and I can buy into the Jets, but I think Oakland's going to be the worst team in the NFL this year. I just can't see them doing anything with the team they have. San Diego has some talent, but I don't see them being that good. Kansas City?
Well, San Diego's going into rebuild mode, so I think they're a team that, you know, maybe they'll be 7-9 or something, but I feel like, you know, they're just not a team that looks like they're gunning to do well this year. They're a team that's, you know, new coach, new GM. They're going to kind of, you know, put the pieces together over the couple years and then make their shot for it, probably without Phillip Rivers.
Now, I do think Kansas City has a really good shot at a wild card. I think they're a solid team.
I think that Kansas City, I mean, at least with my very overzealous Miami Dolphins prediction, I think that KC, if they don't make the playoffs, they'll be like, you know, they'll be the last team out. I think they're going to put together a good season once again, like Miami, partially because Oakland and San Diego are mostly garbage.
Yeah. Though I would put both Oakland and San Diego below the Bills. So I think if you want to look at in terms of schedule, yeah. I would say Miami has the tougher road in the division, but not by all that much.
Definitely. Yep. All right, so let's move over to the NFC. In the NFC East, I think this is going to be a tight race that I think the Redskins will come out on top
of. I think it's going to be tight, but I don't think any of the teams in that division are going to be that good. I mean, it's going to be competitive, but...
Yeah, I think it'll be a three-way race and probably come down to the last week. It'll be, you know, Cowboys, Redskins, and Giants all in the mix, with maybe the Eagles putting together a good first half of the season and then probably getting nagged by some injuries, some growing pains.
I mean, Chip Kelly's system is intriguing, but I don't know if he can pull it off, especially in his first year. I don't know. I
feel like the Eagles have the making of a team that's going to start off like, you know, 4-1 and then wind up being like 6-10.
Yeah. It could be Bethley with that offense. I mean, until somebody figures out how to stop that offense. I mean, I could see that happening. I would pick Washington to win the division. And that, I guess, is contingent on RG3 being healthy.
If I mean, I think Kirk Cousins, he's a competent backup, but even he's got some injury troubles. I feel like if RG3 gets hurt, they go from being, you know, a team with really well-off playoff aspirations to a team that's going to have to, you know, catch a break with the Giants or the Cowboys blowing a game.
But I mean, I think that could certainly happen. I think if Kirk Cousins has to play a few games, I think they're still winnable games with him at the helm. And I don't think the Giants or the Cowboys are that good. I mean, the Cowboys, maybe they could do something, but I really don't see them.
They'll find a way to fuck it up. Like they always do. Yeah, and the Giants, I feel like they're on the decline. They you know, cast off a lot of players in the offseason. Now that I'm saying that, they'll probably win the fucking Super Bowl and beat the Packers.
Yeah, everybody
again.
Was saying exactly that both times they won the Super Bowl going into the season.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I still remember when they won that first Super Bowl in the one against the Patriots, 07 or 08. I went to a Packers-Giants game during week two in New Jersey. And that's after the Packers beat the Giants that week, the Giants were 0-2. And I remember hearing all the Giants fans on the way out being like, the season's fucking done. And then they won the Super Bowl.
I mean, they barely made the playoffs both of those times. But yeah, they're that kind of team. I don't know what they do, but they could do it.
All right. Now we get to my beloved Packers division, the NFC North. I don't think I'm being that much of a homer when I say that I think the Packers are going to win the NFC North.
I think I would agree with that, but I could see either the Bears or the Lions getting a wild card.
Yeah, I think the Vikings are going to be last in that division. I don't think they'll be terrible. Like, probably a 6-10.
I think they could be 6-10, 7-9. I think, like, top to bottom, the NFC North is the best division in the NFL right now. Because, you know, I think the Lions bounce back. I mean, they had a really bad year last year, but they've got all the talent that they have, and I could see them in the playoffs. And I like the Bears. I mean, I like what they're doing. I think, you know, I've always kind of believed in Jay Cutler more than a lot of people do, and he's got Brandon Marshall, and he's got Matt Forte, and you got a new head coach with a focus on offense.
And then, what is it, Alshon Jeffery?
Yes, Jeffery's still there.
The
I mean,
rookie
like,
wide receiver from
they
last
got,
year.
They got all that, and they have, like I said, a new head coach who's more of an offensive guy than who's replacing Lovie Smith. And, you know...
See, the one thing that I worry about the Bears, and this is, you know, I mean, I might be a Packer fan, but I do follow the entire division pretty closely. I think the Lions are the kind of team, just as a quick aside, I think they're the kind of team that's going to put together a respectable season and might sneak into the playoffs, but I don't think they're ready to make that next step. And I think they're undisciplined to an extent. You look at Jim Schwartz and it all goes down from there, whereas, you know, Harbaugh on the Niners is another really kind of, I guess, like, aggressive, assholish coach.
But he wins. He puts up
but
the wins.
Obviously, what Harbaugh's doing is working. With Schwartz, it doesn't seem
well,
to be working.
Well, a couple years ago, Detroit was in the playoffs. I mean, like, this is a team that's still got most of the same people. I like the Reggie Bush pickup. I think he's going to really fit into that system, that offense. And, you know, you got Calvin Johnson, who's the best receiver in the game. Matt Stafford has got a cannon to throw it to him. I could definitely see them in it, but there are like five or six teams in the NFC I could see in as wild card potential. I mean, like the NFC's pretty deep.
And then I think the Lions are going to get second place in the North and probably be the last team out. not make the wild card, but, you know, be right in, you know, the other two wild card spots. And I think the Bears, the thing with them is that I think their defense is going to take a big
nosedive.
That's
the thing. I think that's going to... Their offense is going to be a lot better, but the defense is going to not be as good, so...
Yeah, and I think that's going to... I think they'll pull a 7-9, 8-8 season. You know, probably, maybe have a good run now and then, be at a point where they're threatening for a playoff spot and then kind of taper out. But my thing is that I think that, I mean, one disagreement between Cutler and Trestman, and then I think that whole offense is going to collapse because...
I mean, yeah, that could happen.
I mean, yeah, this is coming from a Packer fan, but Cutler has shown, you know, he's the kind of guy that will go along with it as long as he's happy with it. And the moment that, you know, a coach kind of gives him a little shit, he'll throw a little hissy fit.
But I mean, Cutler's...
I mean, look at last year where...
Cutler's got no excuse now with the
weapons he has. He was so excited for Brandon Marshall to come back, and then he promptly threw it to him like 50% of the fucking time. And then eventually people just started covering Brandon Marshall, and guess what? It didn't work anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Alshon Jeffrey's definitely a nice number two receiver there. And Forte, you can throw to Forte out of the backfield. He's good for that. I mean,
Forte's a great running back.
He is. I was upset that I didn't get to get him in fantasy. But...
See, I think I had him 1 year, but I usually steer clear of division rivals. Although
I
did wind up
too.
with Brandon Pettigrew on the Lions in fantasy this year.
I think I managed to not get any division rivals in either of my fantasy leagues, so I'm happy.
Let's move into the NFC South, where I think it's going to be the Falcons and the Saints duking it out for first place with second place making it to the playoffs.
Yeah, I would
team.
Pick the Falcons to win it, but I think the Saints will get a wild card. The Falcons are just, like, on paper, such a great team. You know, you've got
so
many
pieces. I think they're
going to
dip a little bit from last year, but still good.
Well, I mean, I think Steven Jackson is a good signing. I mean, he's 30, so you never know what you're going to get at this point. But I like him better than I ever liked Michael Turner. So I think they improve at the running game. You still have, I would say, the best 1-2 punch at receiver in the league in Roddy White and Julio Jones.
That's so good.
And you got Tony Gonzalez coming back for one more year. So Matt Ryan, I think, is underrated as a quarterback. I think he's really good. I think they're the most the on paper the best team, or at least the best offense in the NFC. If not anywhere, I think they have such a great offense with all those pieces. Defense, they've lost some guys, so I don't know what they're going to be, but I think they're still dangerous. And then New Orleans, you got Drew Brees, you got all of them. Sean Payton's back. I mean, this is...
Their defense is going to be a disaster, though. That's the one worry with the Saints, and they've had more injuries pile up. I mean, I think... I still think it'll be the Falcons and the Saints competing for that division, but I think come playoff time, I think the Saints... will be, you know, one and done, and I think the Falcons, you know, have a chance to, you know, run the table and go to the Super Bowl. I mean, of course I will pick the Packers to win, but I think the Falcons are a good number two, and that also happens because I hate the Seahawks and the Niners right now.
Even hating them, I don't know how you can deny that they're great, great teams.
Yeah. But we'll get to that soon. First, let's wrap up the rest of the NFC South. I think the Buccaneers are. I think Josh Freeman sucks.
Yeah, he's.
And I think
not
that team depends on him. And I think the Buccaneers will be, if not the worst, one of the worst teams in the NFC. Probably up there.
Well, the NFC's so good. I mean, yeah, and Carolina. I don't know. You know, you got Cam Newton, so that's certainly a nice weapon to have in your stock there, but. You know, apart from him, I don't know what you have. Steve Smith is aging and not what he used to be. I don't know. They got a kind of a mess at running back. So, Cam Newton can only take him so far.
Yeah, I think Stewart or D'Angelo Williams is out for the year
or two.
They like
also
that.
Lost their offensive coordinator in the offseason to Mike Browns. He's now the head coach of Mike Browns. I don't see them being a real
I mean, I
threat.
Think the Panthers are a team that, in one reality, I think they make the playoffs, but I think that reality does not have a high probability of happening. I think they'll be a team that shows improvement.
They've certainly got a better shot than a lot of teams do, but I still don't see it happening.
So let's move on to the NFC West. I think this is a pretty easy thing to predict. I think it'll be the Niners and the Seahawks, probably with the two best records in the NFC, duking it out for the division with the losing team being the 5 seed in the wild card.
Yeah, I think they're both. They might be the 2 best teams in the NFC, if not in all of football. I mean, they're really, really good teams.
They have gotten beaten up by injuries a little bit, which I think exposes them slightly. I think the fact that the Seahawks already have Harvin injured, even the Niners, I think Crabtree's out.
The Niners have more depth at receiver than the Seahawks do, though. I mean, I like Golden Tate.
Well, I also
Seattle,
think the Niners are less dependent on Crabtree, and I think the Seahawks were, expecting to be very dependent on Harvin, because Harvin is a playmaker. He's a great player.
He's
going to
be back at some point, isn't he?
Suit up on the Vikings. He always has migraines and shit.
It's not good.
But he might be back at some point. But he is the kind of guy that he might be back for a couple games and then be out again. He's brittle.
But you got Marshawn Lynch, and you got that defense, and you got that home field advantage. Seriously, I think if Seattle wins that division and gets home field throughout the NFC, I think they go to the Super Bowl, because I don't think anyone can go in there and beat them. I that's just such an advantage. But speaking of beating them, I think I don't think people should sleep on St. Louis, because I think they've got a pretty solid defense, and
they only lost one game in the division last year.
They
went like 4-1-1.
Yeah, they did. They had a great record in the division, didn't do so hot outside the division. But that's, again, it's quarterback. It's Sam Bradford be what he was in his rookie season, because his rookie season he was pretty good. He hasn't been the same since.
I mean, I think the one thing that's going to hurt the Rams is that I don't think Bradford really is that good of a quarterback, and I think what helped him out a lot was Danny Amendola, and unfortunately Amendola is on the Patriots now, and I don't know if Tavon Austin is going to be the right fit, because Amendola is, that Wes Welker type, and I think Tavon Austin is going to be a great receiver, but I don't know how much he's going to elevate that team.
I think Bradford's got a good amount of talent, and I think he has it in him to improve and be good again, but I don't necessarily see it. Like I said, that defense is underrated. That's a defense that nobody really talks about, but they're pretty darn good. And, you got questions at running back because you don't have Steven Jackson. I don't remember the guy's name they have, but I do own him in one of my fantasy teams.
Daryl Richardson?
Yes, I have him in one of my teams. But
and then I think Isaiah Pede. I had Steven Jackson last year, so I had some handcuffs because that dude was hurt.
And Arizona, I don't think Arizona is going to be that bad. I think they're going to be bad within the division and the NFC, but I think Carson Palmer's not great, but he's certainly an improvement over who they had last
year. I think they'll be a competitive team.
Yeah, I see them as a team that I don't see them as a playoff team at all, but I think they're a team that can steal some games in that division.
Yeah, I'd say they're comparable to the Chiefs, because the Chiefs and the Cardinals both had fucking terrible quarterback play last year, and they're upgrading to mediocre, maybe a little better than mediocre quarterback play, and I think that'll help out both teams. Also, the Cardinals still have Larry Fitzgerald.
And also Michael Floyd, who's their number 2 receiver, who, as you know, my sister went to Notre Dame, I saw a lot of him play, and he's pretty darn good himself. That offensive line is improved. I mean, that offense is going to be a lot better this year than it was last year. And their defense last year was really good. So, I mean, that's a team, again, I don't see them in the playoffs or anything, but I think they'll be a tough team to beat, who's still going to lose 10 games probably.
Well, all right. I think that just about does it. But I guess before the season starts, we're recording this the night before the season starts. Who are your AFC championship teams, as in like the 2 teams in the AFC championship, and who are your teams in the NFC championship if you just had to predict right now?
Well, I think in the AFC it's easy because I think Denver and New England are head and shoulders above everybody else in that conference. I think they're both, they get a bye the first week, and I think they meet up in the title game.
I think Denver is pretty much my pick for the Super Bowl in the AFC. I think it'll be Denver and Cincinnati in the AFC Championship.
I don't like Cincinnati that much. I think they've got so much firepower. You can plug just about anybody into that offense with Belichick and Brady, and you can make them do great things. I really think I don't see anyone who's better than them. I agree that they're not quite what they used to be, but I don't see anyone else better than him in the AFC.
Yeah, and then the NFC for me, I think the Packers will make it to the NFC Championship game, and I think they will face off against the Seahawks, and I will probably shit my pants at least 3 times during that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
And I'm not sure. I think that really depends on whoever has home field will win that game.
That's what I mean. I said this earlier in the little segment here that if Seattle gets home field, if they get first seed in the NFC, which would be tough to do playing in that division, but if they do, I see them in the Super Bowl. I mean, like, that's such a powerful home field advantage that they have there at CenturyLink. And, you know, I think Green Bay is as solid a choice as anybody to face them. I could see San Francisco in there too, which would be a heck of a game to have that decide the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I could see the Falcons sneaking in there too.
You know, with as talented as the NFC is, and Atlanta having a history of folding under pressure, giving games away, I don't see them advancing that far this year. And in New Orleans, we said, their defense isn't going to last a lot against a lot of these teams. And whoever wins the East, I don't see being a factor at all. I mean, I think whoever wins the East is a 4 seed and loses to whoever didn't win the West in the first round.
Seattle or San Fran. Yep. All right. Well, I think that just about does it for this NFL segment. Once again, let us know what you think, and maybe we'll do more of these throughout the season. Thanks for listening.
See ya.